Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you conversations with interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is journalist Karen Middleton. Karen is Chief Political Correspondent for the Saturday Paper. She's written a book, An Unwinnable War, Australia in Afghanistan, published in 2011, and has previously been Chief Political Correspondent for SBS Television. Karen is also the author of a book, Albanese, Telling It Straight. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Now, Karen, I said the name there, Albanese, but there is some uncertainty about how to pronounce Anthony Albanese's name, isn't there?
That's right, yeah. So Anthony's obviously a Labor Party politician, was Deputy Prime Minister briefly under Kevin Rudd when Kevin Rudd returned to the Prime Ministership. And this book is a sort of personal story of Albanese. That's how I pronounce it. But one of the funny things about him is that he pronounces it all different ways and certainly responds to it being pronounced all different ways. And I guess that's partly because growing up, he was given that name by his mother. It was the name of his father, but he never knew his father growing up, and so he was never sure how to pronounce it. He lived in inner Sydney, and they just pronounced it Albanese at that stage, and he quickly became Albo among his mates. But the Italian community around the area where he ultimately became a politician and represented started to sort of say to him, hang on, you know, it shouldn't be Albanese, it should be Albanese. So, yeah, flexible pronunciation. And I always think that's interesting that he himself actually pronounces it a number of different ways.
Yes. Well, I think we'll just stay with Albo. That seems to be the easiest way. So now Albo says that having no father didn't bother him, but did it?
I think it did, and I think his friends think it did. I think he was a resilient young man. His mother is a central focus of this book as well. She was a single mum. She was sort of under some pressure to give her baby up for adoption when she gave birth to Anthony, but she decided not to do that, but constructed this whole story that she had married his father on a trip overseas, that he'd been killed in a car accident, and that she'd come home pregnant and brought the baby up herself. And she was a good Catholic girl in working class in Western Sydney, and she was doing that to protect both of their reputations and the reputation of the family. But in fact, she'd met the father on the cruise ship that took her to England on a grand overseas adventure that had a relatively brief relationship, and she'd become pregnant, but he was engaged to be married back home in Italy. So he was an Italian, and so he didn't marry her, and she came home alone. So she constructed a life for herself and her son. They lived with her parents, and he was a very determined and independent young person and just decided that he was going to get on as best he could. His mum was pretty unwell. She had terrible arthritis, and he had to do a lot for her, became her carer growing up. So I think that instilled a sense of resilience, and he was absolutely determined not to let anyone think that he was disadvantaged by not having a dad. But he does acknowledge that, you know, there were times when he was young where he was jealous, I suppose, of some of the things that would happen for kids who did have a dad, like Christmas parties, work Christmas parties, and the kids went off to their dad's work Christmas party and things like that, and he didn't have anything like that to go to. And so there were periods in his life where he does reveal that I think it affected him, and I think how deeply it had affected him kind of deep down emerged when he finally decided as a growing man to go looking for it.
Perhaps you could just tell us a little bit more about that that first bit. I mean, his mother, Marianne, had this romantic liaison with the ship steward.
Yes, it seems by all reports that it was a, you know, whirlwind romance on board the ship. But in those days, it took quite a long time to get from Australia to the UK, and these were the ships that brought the 10-pound POMs back to Australia. So they were a ship that went up through Asia, up the Suez Canal, and took quite a sort of, I guess, a circuitous route, and were a holiday ship for those going from Australia to England, and then they brought the migrants back in the other direction. So it meant that the fares on the ship were quite inexpensive, and this was a grand adventure for Marianne. Her brother was going on the ship as an entertainer with a friend of his, and he persuaded her to go with him. She was happy to go, and her parents were happy to go, that she had a sort of chaperone, I guess. She was in her early 20s. Mm-hmm. But it was her first big trip away, and she met this young, dashing Carlo, and they had this romance. Now, she is no longer living, neither now is Carlo, but there was one member of their travelling party, a woman that they met on board the ship, who subsequently married Marianne's brother. She is still alive in Sydney. She's Anthony's aunt, and she was able to give me sort of first-hand stories of this fantastic trip that they took, this very exotic trip, and all this romance and the drama, I guess, of Marianne becoming pregnant and trying to decide what to do and coming home to Sydney and being sort of sad that she never connected with Carlo, as Anthony's father's name is Carlo, and just the way that she then managed her life, you know, took on the name, gave her son the name of the man that he'd never met, and sort of made out like they'd been married when they never had, and she just did this for reputational protection.
And Anthony Albo took that on very much as well, didn't he? He was very protective of his mother.
Very protective of her. He remains very devoted to her. She's no longer living, as I said, but he goes out to the cemetery at Rookwood in Sydney regularly and puts flowers on her grave and makes sure that it's tended properly. He was utterly devoted to her, recognises how much he owes to her for where his life has taken him. You know, he's a very skilled politician, but he recognises that it was her determination and her encouragement and her protectiveness and what she wanted for her son that led him on the path that he took. She was a member of the Labor Party, and so were her parents, and they took him as a young boy along to Labor Party meetings. That became a natural course for him, but it was the thing that she encouraged him to do, like to study hard and to go to university, and the sacrifices that she made financially, because she had very little money of her own, she was a pensioner, that saw him succeed the way he has. So he's completely devoted to her and very, very sensitive of making sure that her memory is maintained and honoured.
And one of the good things that I guess allowed subsequent events was that there doesn't seem to be any bitterness, or was never any bitterness, between Marianne and Carlo, Anthony's parents, even though that they'd split even before the birth.
Well, we think she tried to contact Carlo when she was pregnant. I did speak to a number of her friends and neighbours who lived around the Camperdown flats where Anthony Albo grew up, and they felt that she loved him dearly, but that he didn't love her back in the same way, and he went on to marry the woman that he was engaged to and live in Italy throughout the rest of his life. And as far as we know, there was no further contact between them. So there wasn't bitterness, but there wasn't any relationship. And I think that was a deep sadness for Marianne, and eventually became an unresolved thing for Albo as he grew up, got married and had his own son, and his own son started asking questions about, well, where's your daddy? Mm. And Albo started to think then, well, I need to go and see if I can find him. He had one substantial conversation with his mother as a teenager where, you know, having told him that his father had been killed in a car accident, she finally told him the truth when he was about 14 or 15 years old, sat him down and said, look, actually, this is what really happened. I don't know if he's alive or dead. And Albo said to her at that point, well, you're enough. I don't need my father. You've done everything for me. I don't need to look for him. And he felt that she wanted him to say that, and so that's what he said. And that's the course that he followed for the best part of four more decades, until he was more than 50 years old and she had died. And once she had died, he started to think, okay, now I think I feel free enough to go and pursue this and see if I can find him.
So we've reached the point of the great disclosure. Karen, we might take a short break here. You've picked a song for us. Could you tell us which song and why you picked it?
I picked a song by Gurumul, who's an Indigenous musician and from the Northern Territory, Jeffrey Gurumul, and it's called Bapa, and that actually means father in his Indigenous language. He grew up in a remote community on Elko Island in the Northern Territory, and I was up there on a special exchange as part of a bicentennial reconciliation program way back in 1988,
And I met this young kid who was blind and was playing drums on an upturned bucket. And I realised many, many years later when I suddenly saw this musician emerge that this was the kid that I had met in this community. So I suppose it has some personal resonance for me. It's the language that I learnt a few words of, and it's a song, a love song really, from this man to his father.
Bappa by Gurumul, a very emotional song. I think even if you don't understand the language, you can get the meaning from that song. And our guest today is Karen Middleton, journalist and author of the book Albanese, Telling It Straight. So, Karen, we were just at the point where Anthony Albanese's mother, Marianne, had told him that the true story of his father and the fact that his father hadn't died in a car accident, as Albo had believed for the first 14 years of his life. Why do you think Marianne felt that she had to unburden herself to Anthony in that way?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's an interesting exercise, Bill, in trying to come to understand a person who you can't speak to yourself. So I was trying to understand what was motivating her. And I think she just... it was a point of dishonesty that she felt was sort of coming between her and Albo, I guess. That's my best guess, that she felt she owed it to him to tell him the truth, and that if he, when he was old enough to understand what happened, if he wanted to go and be sort of free to look for his father, that he should be able to do that. And so she gave him that opportunity. And I think from what he has said and what others have said, I think she was relieved that he decided not to do that. Mm. And she wasn't going to lose her son to this Italian man overseas like she'd lost the man himself. And that's my best guess about why she felt that she just needed to know it, that it was, she needed to be truthful to him and give him the chance to go off and search if he wanted to.
Yes, it strikes me that everyone was really trying to be honourable. Marianne wanted to maintain the honour, I guess, primarily for Albo, as he was growing up, and Carlo himself felt obligated to this woman in the village, so he felt he had obligations. It's a strange story, but everyone's sort of trying to make the best of it, I think.
That's exactly right, and Marianne's decision-making was all motivated by trying to make the best of it for her son, as you say. And yes, Carlo had obviously got himself into this situation, and I think he cared for Marianne. This relationship went on after they arrived in England, because he was working on the ship, as I said, and they did these six-week trips. He was on constant rotation going back from the UK back to Australia. So when he was in port, briefly when they arrived, this relationship continued, and then he went off travelling and came back through the UK again about 3 months later, and they met up again, and that's when she became pregnant. So, you know, I think it was more than just an unfeeling dalliance, but he did clearly feel obligated to the woman that he was supposed to marry, and he went home and he indeed did marry her, and they had a long married life and other children. So it was it's a sad story, but it is a story of love and honour and trying to protect the people that you're committed to.
Now, what set Albo off on the path, it was, I think, about 2 years after his mother, Marianne, had died, was his son, Albo's son, Nathan, said to his father at the gravesite of Albo's mother, you know, where's your daddy?
That's exactly right. And I think he'd had this gnawing feeling that he'd been trying to ignore, that he really did want some answers, and he had his own son, Nathan. They obviously didn't know the full story of their heritage. By this point, he was in Parliament as a politician. He represents the seat of Greenlaw in inner Western Sydney, which takes in Leichhardt, which is a very thriving Italian community. And so there were a lot of Italians who were saying to him, hey, you're an Italian, you've got Italian heritage, what's your father's story, where are you from? And he didn't know the answers to those questions. So I think that the combination of Nathan's curiosity, his own need to know where he came from, and the questions of others set him out on this path, and there were a series of really weird coincidences that led him to find his father. It could have gone either way at any point, and he was very fortunate that everything lined up, and he was able to find him and meet him and be reconciled, and all of those things could have not happened that way, and he might have been left never knowing. So he does feel much more resolved about that now.
He had all the right contacts, but it still took him, I think, something like 2 years before he actually got the word that we've found him.
Yeah, that's right. So he tried a whole lot of different ways. He tried through the archives to find out what he knew, and he got some information. He knew that Carlo had been on the ship. He had a name, and he knew roughly when his mother had travelled, but he didn't have a great deal to go on, and so he started through the archives and tried to ask relatives, again, his Aunt Joan, as much as she could tell him about what had happened. And then in the end, he suddenly thought of asking Anne Sherry. He was a Minister for Transport, so he had some contact with Anne, and he knew her anyway. He suddenly thought, I wonder if the shipping line can provide us with any information. So he approached her and asked her if she could help him, do him a favour. Could she go through and see if there were any records? She sort of course, said, yes, I'll try. And she has a historian, Rob Henderson, who does some work for Carnival Cruises, and enlisted him to see what he could find out. And he gets requests like this often. He's a very interesting man, actually, and he tries to help out people when they're looking for relatives or friends. But this was a particularly difficult one because there was so little to go on. And it really was an incredible coincidence that he managed to call in a favour from someone he'd met overseas who happened to be going to Italy. This guy went, poked around a bit and said, look, I think there might be some old records in a shed at the end of a jetty, in Naples or in Genoa, and I haven't got time to have a look this time, but I'll be back in Italy in 3 months, I'll have another look. So time dragged on, and Rob wasn't really confident about it, and he wasn't in contact with Albo at all. It had all gone through Anne Sherry, and so Albo didn't really know what was happening, just sort of waited to see what happened. And then 3 months later, this chap made good on his word, went back to Italy, found the shed, went through the boxes. There'd been a fire and a whole lot of them had been damaged, but amongst the stuff that had survived was one box with the crew details from the Fair Sky, and one of those cards was related to Carlo Albanese. So they managed to get an address, and then through some pension records in Italy, match up the address, and then Albo set about starting to try and contact him. And then he enlisted Amanda Vanstone, who was Australia's ambassador in Italy at the time in Rome, a former Liberal politician, and she and her staff tried to help as well. And gradually, they managed to contact the family, who were a bit suspicious at the time, thinking, what does this man want? Does he want money? What does he want? And they eventually persuaded the family to meet him, and he was on a work trip to Italy at one point, so he diverted and went to see them, and ended up having this incredibly emotional meeting with his father and what turned out to be two half-siblings.
Then, at that stage, you have all the usual problems of a reunion where you're not sure what the reaction would be, and I guess he had a lot of sleepless nights worrying how the new family would relate to him. I mean, it was, you know, effectively a dalliance of their father from 30 or 40 years ago. There must have been some worries on Albo's part as well.
Well, that's right, and he wasn't sure how the meeting with his father would go. He didn't even know about the siblings at that point. He,
I think it says a lot about the whole family, the Albanese family in Italy, but particularly about Carlo's wife, who obviously could have stood in the way of any kind of meeting, or could have tried to at least, and by all reports didn't do that. So she's obviously a big-hearted person to say, yes, of course, you should go and meet this. We don't know whether she had known there was a baby, whether he'd ever told her. Mm. He maintained when he spoke to Albo that he didn't know, that Anthony thinks that's not right, because he knows his mother tried to contact him and tell him. So he thinks that his father just decided just to not think about it and not contact him. Now, that's quite a difficult thing for a person to come to terms with, I guess, when you're going to meet your father for the first time as a 50-year-old. So there was a lot that they all had to set aside in meeting, because Carlo told his son Anthony that he never knew he existed, and we're fairly sure that's not true. We're fairly sure that Marianne had actually told him the baby existed. So the reality was that he never went looking for him, and that for 50 years, you know, that there was no attempt to contact him. So for Albo, it must have been a big thing, I think, to not be angry about that and not be upset about it. It was a big thing for the wife, his father's wife, to allow this reconciliation to happen, and a big thing for Carlo to allow Anthony into his life, where that could have really upset and disturbed his existing family relationships. And we don't, look, as I've said, we don't know how much the family knew, or if the family knew about this at all. So, you know, it was potential for it to go very badly wrong, and there was a lot of forgiveness that had to occur. And Anthony made the decision not to question his father when his father said that. He said, you know, he wouldn't question the claim that his father made, that he hadn't known about him. He just let that go. And I think that was a big thing to be able to do. But it meant that they could have a reconciliation, which might have gone badly otherwise.
So it does have this happy ending to the story. Could you describe the situation when Anthony finally got to meet his father?
Yeah, well, the family sort of organised through an intermediary, a lawyer that they knew, to be the one to contact Anthony, and he went and met her at her office in this little town in southern Italy where the family lives. And she wanted to sort of question him first and find out exactly what the story was. He hadn't given a huge amount away in the letter. They just said, oh, this person wants to meet you. And it was only in the very first meeting with the lawyer that he made it clear that his surname was Albanese, and then it became clear to her what the situation was. And he basically had to persuade this lawyer that it was a personal quest and there was no money, he wasn't looking for money or anything else. And she felt sorry for him. She had sympathy for him, and she said, I will go and talk to the family and I will advocate for you. And she did that. And he went away and waited, and the point was that it was going to be, if there was going to be a meeting, it was going to be the next day. And she went and persuaded the family, and they agreed. And so the next day, he went back to the lawyer's office, which was sort of mutual territory, I guess. And Carlo and the two siblings, the son and the daughter, siblings of Albo, turned up. And so there was this incredible meeting. And Albo says he didn't doubt that this was his father. And when his father walked into the room, he just walked up. The father, Carlo, walked up to him and embraced him. Mm. And, I mean, that was a pretty amazing gesture that cut through some of the anxiety. And then they sat down and talked through the lawyer, who could speak English. And at one point, Albo said he had no doubt that this was his dad, but he just wanted to satisfy himself one more thing. And he had a copy of an old photograph, the only picture he'd ever seen of his father, which was his mother and her travelling companions on the ship, sitting in the ship's dining room all those years ago, and standing up beside the table in his uniform was Carlo. And so Albo pulled out this photo and showed it to him and said, do you recognise this? And Carlo said, yes, I've got a copy of it as well. And he kept the photo all those years. So that was quite an emotional moment for everybody. And I think it helped move the situation along and shake off some of the confusion and perhaps anger that might have been lingering.
So he went on to have 4 years with his father before his father died, as you mentioned. Karen Middleton, I can't let this moment go, but knowing as much as you do about the political scene and about Albo and his past, do you think he'll ever be Prime Minister?
Well, it's an excellent question. I think it's an unknowable question at the moment. You know, he certainly demonstrated that he had ambition. He had a crack at it before with Bill Shorten, ran against Bill Shorten, and Albo actually won the popular vote among the Labor Party membership, but he didn't win enough supporters inside his own Labor Party caucus. Some of the members of his own left faction, for reasons to do with old businesses and power struggles inside the left, voted for Bill Shorten, who's in the right, instead of voting for Albo. I know that affected him quite deeply. He was pretty wounded by that, and he's the sort of person that likes to get his own back eventually. So whether that means it motivates him to have another go at some point is anyone's guess. But at the moment, I think, with the Labor Party rating so well, that there's no prospect of a leadership change on the Labor Party side in the short term. Of course, if Bill Shorten was to slide, or there would be a problem, and the leadership was to become in question again, well, I would be surprised if Albo didn't have a go. But does that mean he'll ever get there? Well, who knows?
We'll watch this space. So, Karen, we ask our guests at this point of the program to pick another song for us. I wonder if you could tell us which one you picked.
This is kind of a crazy song. It's a song by Kirsty MacColl called In Her Shoes. I like it. Well, I like the tune of it, but I like it because it's all about crazy adventures and following your heart. And I suppose there was a bit of that in Marianne and what she did, but there's a bit of that in me as well. So hopefully people will like it. It's, as I said, a fun song, nothing too serious, In Her Shoes by Kirsty MacColl.
In These Shoes by Kirsty MacColl. Our guest today has been Karen Middleton, journalist and author of the book Albanese Telling It Straight. Karen, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll see you again next week for another show on Dads on the Air.